doing?
Celebrating the connection with our pets. This is Animal Radio, featuring your dream team, veterinarian Dr. Debbie White and groomer Joey Villani. And here are your hosts, Hal Abrams and Judy Francis.
Dr. Debbie, have you ever worked on a chimp? Do you have any chimp patients?
I do not. And you know what? I do enjoy working with exotic animals, but I kind of had this rule. Very early on, I discovered that I didn't feel comfortable working with an animal that I could catch a human disease from.
Sure, sure. So they can carry human diseases?
Yeah, oh yeah, and hepatitis, certainly one of them, but yeah, and you know, they're a primate. It's kind of like looking into the eyes of a relative, and it just kind of gives me the heebie-jeebies, kind of honestly. So, I don't want to work on people, and chimps just are too close to people, so I can't do it.
Well, Ebola is from chimps, right?
Yeah, well, there's oodles of diseases that, you know, primates share, so, it's just a fact of working with them. People that work with them use precautions. It's just not my cup of tea.
See, I gave up Facebook altogether, as a lot of you know, primarily because I was watching chimp videos all day. And, you know, they get in their baths, doing all kinds of fun things. It was a big time suck. And I didn't get any work done. I love chimps. And my wife doesn't want anything to do with chimps because they can throw their poop, apparently. This is something
with accuracy, too, I've heard.
Yeah, There is a chimp sanctuary here in the United States. It's in Louisiana. And today we're going to be talking to one of the, I'm going to say she's the director of behavior and research at Chimp Haven, Amy Foltz. And she will tell us what it's like to have chimpanzees as friends. They save them over there. It's like a shelter.
It's like a sanctuary.
It's a sanctuary. Mm-hmm. I guess these chimps are coming from research.
Laboratories, yeah.
Yeah.
That would be such a meaningful job.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's great to see them getting out of the labs.
So we'll talk to her and find out what that's all about in just a few minutes. Also a guy who's gone to China to save a bunch of dogs. We'll find out what his story is coming up right here on Animal Radio. Hey, Rick, welcome to the show.
How you doing?
Well, hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. What kind of critter do you have?
She's a black lab. She'll be 5 in July.
And awesome. All right. I'm a black lab lover myself.
Oh, good. We've got a little problem with her being overweight.
Okay.
She's about 90 pounds.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, but she's been riding with me in the truck over the road since she was 6 weeks old. And I try to exercise her every day, throwing a tennis ball like 5 or 6 times a day we do that. And,
okay.
I mean, she runs and runs and runs, and she just keeps on putting the weight on.
All righty. Well, I mean, so at the other times of the day, then she's riding with you and just kind of sedentary, kind of chilling?
Right.
Okay. So the big thing I would have to say is being a Labrador, now I always talk body condition, so numbers to me don't always ring as true. But if she's a 90 pound and you can say as her father, you could say, yeah, she's heavy, then I trust that. Because the body condition is by far more meaningful than any number on the scale. So if you put your hands on her chest and you feel like some fatty resistance before you can actually feel ribs, then we're talking that, yeah, we're carrying extra weight there. And if we don't have a nice little inward turning hip when you look at the top view of your dog or the side view, then we're probably in the overweight category there. So the big challenges for you would be, limiting your calories and then increasing your exercise. So I like the idea that you have tried doing retrieving and playing ball, because that is a great way to help expend energy. So we want to remember that same kind of formulas for us, about 30 minutes to 60 minutes of continual exercise. So ball playing may not be able to fill up that whole time, but leash walking and other types of physical activity, swimming would be wonderful.
Those kind of things. Swim.
Yeah, and you know what? That's such it exhausts them. It really burns up the calories very wonderfully. So swimming and retrieving for me would be some of the big ways to kind of help burn down her energy level, kind of tire her out, and then maybe also supplement that with a little bit of walking, leash walking along the way. But calorie-wise, we really got to watch what you're putting in the doggy's gullet. So if we need to get on a serious weight loss program, then I like to go into some of the therapeutic weight loss diets.
Well, I switched her over to a healthy weight Purina, the more expensive. bunch of stuff. And yeah. I only give her a half, one cup in the morning and one cup about 4 in the afternoon, 5 in the afternoon.
Okay. Now, I'm going to caution you because with some of the, you know, there's some great foods out there on the market that are marketed as a weight loss diet. The problem that I have is that for real true weight loss, we really ought to have your veterinarian involved in kind of supervising that. The problem becomes when we take weight loss foods that are sold on the general market and we restrict the volume for our pets. We can actually cause problems. By decreasing the amount you feed, you can limit not only the calories she's taken in, but also the nutrients. So we don't want her to be nutrient deficient, and we also don't want her to end up feeling hungry and unsatisfied. So I would certainly check with some of the different local vets in your areas what kind of prescription weight loss foods they have. There's different ones by Purina, Science Diet, Royal Canin, IAMS. There's oodles out there, but really to get on one that is made for weight loss. And the idea is those foods have higher fiber. They may be supplemented with carnitine to help burn fat. And those are going to be my best recommendations for diet. And we really look for maybe only 1 to 2% body weight loss per week. So we're going for gradual. We don't want to make her hungry and make her frustrated in any way. The other thing you might look into, and for any retriever especially, I'm always suspect with this if we're talking weight issues, is to have her thyroid level screened. It is a common cause of weight gain in many breeds, but also especially in these Labradors, where we can just kind of not maybe eat a lot, but just kind of pack those pounds on over time. And I would certainly personally wish for a thyroid problem to lose weight if we could all take a magical pill. But, you know, if that is a problem, I would hate for you to miss that and not have that evaluated.
Now, I had her spayed. Uh-huh. It seemed like she put on a lot of weight on right after that.
Uh-huh.
Is that common?
Well, what we have to remember is basically when we're spaying a dog, we're changing their metabolism. So it can lead to weight gain if we don't change our feeding habits. So I definitely recommend pretty much the day a pet is leaving my office getting spayed, we have that talk about metabolism. And any lady that's gone through menopause or ended up with a hysterectomy will attest that it is hard to keep the weight off afterwards. And we can run into that with our dog. So don't continue to feed her like you did when she was a young juvenile. We really just have to limit the calories and make sure that we keep her activity level up and, keep that in mind. So it's not a reason not to spay, just to know that it can happen and we just need to kind of get ahead of things before, they pack that weight on. And, one other thing you might try, even things to keep her occupied and busy and keep her mentally stimulated in the cab of the truck would be some of the different interactive toys. And you might throw some of her food into those different little toys. If she's into the Kong toys, there's Busy Buddy is another brand. And you can hide the food items in there. And she kind of has to work to get them to fall out of the different toys. And it kind of keeps them occupied, mentally stimulated. And really, we make it so easy putting that food in front of our pets. That this is a great way to make her kind of work for it, if you will.
Okay. Another question I have, she expects a treat every time that she goes to the bathroom. That's my fault because I've...
Every time? Whoa, every time she goes to the bathroom? You said every time she goes to the bathroom, right?
Every time that I get out of the truck and I come back in, I give her a biscuit. Now, I used to give her the medium-sized biscuits. I cut her down to the puppy ones.
Okay, well, here we go to the nitty-gritty. Now the truth comes out, Rick. Now I know what the problem is. Definitely. She's being overtreated. Definitely. So I guess that's the first and foremost thing. You're doing exactly what my mother did. Every time the doggie went outside, even if it wasn't, he didn't do anything, he would fake it to get a cookie. We called them cookie runs in our house because my dog was so smart. He'd run out, come back in, get a cookie. And I'm like, Mom, he didn't do anything. And she'd be like, he tried. So indefinitely, I would say we want to go to a high fiber biscuit. So puppy, if you're talking small, that's great. But if you're talking made for puppies, those are probably higher calories and we don't need to go there. We can try substituting other things. So you can try those little fresh baby carrots. That's a great little treat. You can look at her daily food amount, though, what you're feeding her, and take one kibble out. And remember that you can't add more in for the day. Measure out her feeding feeding a mountain. And if you're giving her a piece of goody every time she goes outside, she may not have anything left over to eat at the end of the day. So you may want to rethink your reward system for
like, how about just like a good girl, good girl, or something like that.
She'll look at me and look at the treat box. And look at me and look at the treat box.
Well, this is where, Rick, it takes tough love. And I can tell you, I got those big brown eyes from my Labradors, too. I treat them maybe 1 out of 100 times when they do something on a command. And that's all it takes. They don't need it every time. It's that one time out of that 100 or so that they remember. They still do the good things. They still listen to me. And they're not any worse for the wear. So it really, you have to change in your heart. And you can do it. You can be that tough dad. And remember that every calorie you put in extra is really going to affect her and cause problems down the road. So gotta look inside yourself, change there.
Yeah, so. Well, I've wanted her to be around for a while, so I'd be lost without this dog, you know, so and that's why I know I gotta do something. I don't want her to get, because I had one dog that got diabetic on me, and that's because she ate every table scrap we ever had.
Well, you nipped this in the bud. You got some great tips there, some great ideas. Unfortunately, we are out of time, Rick, but thanks for your call.
Well, this portion of Animal Radio is underwritten by Fear Free Happy Homes. Don't forget, you can get your fix of Animal Radio anytime you want with the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android. Download it now. It's made possible by Fear Free Happy Homes, helping your pets live their happiest, healthiest, fullest lives at home, at the vet, and everywhere in between. Visit them at fearfreehappyhomes.com. And thanks, Fear Free, for underwriting Animal Radio.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Hi, everybody. This is Frankie Avalon, and I love Animal Radio. Keep listening.
Do you have Medicare and do you use a CPAP machine? This is a national healthcare alert regarding your CPAP supplies. Using a clean CPAP mask and clean supplies is important to staying healthy. The best way to make sure your CPAP equipment is clean is to get new supplies. If you have Medicare, we have great news. Medicare will pay for you to have new clean supplies every 90 days. We'll even do all the paperwork for you to make sure that there's little to no out-of-pocket cost to you. And you don't even have to leave your home. We provide free in-home delivery. So if you're a CPAP user and you have Medicare, staying healthy with new CPAP equipment is easy. Just make this free phone call right now to get started.
Sponsored by Specialty Medical. 800-485-4409. 800-485-4409. 800-485-4409. That's 800-485-4409.
Hey, this is Sean Hayes on Animal Radio. Remember to spay and neuter your pets.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
It is Animal Radio. This is where we celebrate the connection with our pets and animals, which we know are much smarter than us humans ever.
Duh,
I don't think anyone's going to argue that.
No, they are.
Well, they can hear better and see better.
Most certainly. And they probably could speak English, but or any language, but they opt not to, knowing that that just gets into all kinds of trouble.
Look what we've done with language.
Yeah, we've really screwed it up. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to talk to the end of the ladies who are looking at this picture here. He's a hunk. Yes, he's a hunk. We're going to be talking to Jeffrey Berry. He's the founder of No Dogs Left Behind, and he heads on over to China to rescue dogs. And of course, you know, in China, they don't look at their animals like we look at our animals. They look at them with like on the dinner table.
Now, in some parts,
not all over China.
In some parts of China, dogs are revered and they're spoiled.
Yeah,
Then there's other areas where they're
Same thing in the United States. Portions of the United States, animals are treated very poorly. But he goes over there, he rescues these animals, and he brings them back to the United States.
Good for him.
It's fun, a little traveling. You rescue these animals. He probably sees animals in horrible conditions.
Yeah, though. I don't think it's too fun, the situation he takes them out of.
So he'll be joining us in just a few minutes right here on Animal Radio. Lori, what are you working on? We're about 10 minutes away from a check of news with you.
There is a new trend among colleges and universities. Like, you know, the big pet boom is going everywhere to everything, expanding. And now apparently to colleges. Not that your pet will get a degree, but that maybe your child can take a pet with them to college. We'll tell you more about it.
It's a new trend. Watch it closely. Is. And I bet you they'll do studies in 10 years and they'll find out the places that kids took pets to college, these kids are coming out smarter. They're coming out.
They're graduating.
Adjusted. They're graduating and they're well adjusted. let's see. Which one do we go to? Line three? Okay. Hi, Lorena. How are you doing today?
Well, I have a cat that's been very, very sick. He got in a cat fight. He's a year old. And he ended up staying in the hospital for like a week and antibiotics and everything. Well, he's getting better now. But when I let him outside, he goes and starts eating rock, like little slate rock.
Wow.
Okay, yeah. Is he having any digestive problems, any kind of vomiting, changing his stools?
He was vomiting, and then he stopped. No, his stools look good.
All righty. And you said he's a year old, and is he neutered?
Yes. He got neutered in June, and he's still on antibiotics. He's been on antibiotics for like a month and a half because he was really, really sick. He had big old pussy holes just popping out all over, you know.
Okay. All right. Well, I will tell you that, you know, there can be some kitties that do this strange behavior, what we call pica, where they eat unusual things, whether they're, you know, things like rocks or plastics or household items or you name it. And that can be a behavioral problem, but I would actually be a bit concerned with your baby that we might have something else going on. And some of the common causes of a cat doing this and eating such strange things can actually be something as simple as being anemic, having a low red blood cell count. For some reason, it triggers an instinctive response, and the animals try to eat things unusual. And that may be that they're trying to rebuild iron or something in their body, but that can be a common cause. So for me, any kitty that does this, I would pull a blood panel, check that, see what his blood count looks like. It wouldn't hurt if he hasn't already been tested for kitty leukemia and kitty AIDS to double check.
Yes.
He has. Good. I will also, if they're doing this just as a therapy, I will try vitamin B injections. Cobalamin is the specific B vitamin. And do that, at least on a weekly basis, just to see if that helps. If it does, that may give us some support that he's got something more digestive in nature that we need to investigate and to look at. And that's something your vet can do pretty easily.
Okay. Now, I would also lost a lot of weight. Is there something I can do to help him gain weight?
And a lot of this is going to go back to getting him through this illness, so making sure his health plane is good. I will often, even if we don't see worms, I deworm a kitty. That also helps to treat for some of those worms we can't see, like stomach worms, which never even passed in the stool, and they pick up from eating insects and things like snails and so forth. So deworm him. I'd see about those B vitamin injections, and then make sure that, you know, you stay on top of that red count. So if he's still not pulling around, I may even want to recheck that CBC just to make sure he doesn't have a problem there. And then, you know, a lot of it's also going to be a little bit of human supervision and kind of keeping him on either a harness if you need to when he's outdoors. If he's not where he's 100% well yet, I really wouldn't recommend him have full rein outside. That might just be a little too much freedom for him right now that he could get into trouble, and you can't supervise what he's ingesting at that point. So
He doesn't stray far from the house because he's so weak. We just put him out, you know, so he can get some sunlight and walk around.
Just keep him away from that gravel. We don't want him eating that gravel because then we'll have another whole problem to deal with there.
We have like slate. It's like a slate rock, and there's only certain spots that he goes to eat this.
And like I said, that may be something that's more of an instinct that he's triggering, that he's feeling like he needs to get some important minerals, iron, and so forth.
Okay.
So keep that leash, you know, in your hand. You can control where he goes and just limit those times of exercise outside where you know he's going to be safe and he's not going to get into that. So don't give your baby a pat. My goodness, it sounds like he's been through a lot medically going on there.
Thanks for your call, Lorena. Good luck with that.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Hey, this is Brian DeTillo. Pillow. I play Lucas Roberts on Days of Our Lives. You're listening to Animal Radio. And please don't forget to have your pets spayed or neutered. That's my favorite saying from Bob Barker, by the way.
If you're a diabetic, we have great news. You can end the painful finger sticks with a new CGM. Plus, they may be covered by Medicare, Medicaid, or private insurance. If you test and inject daily, you may qualify. Call U.S. Med now to learn more.
800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. That's 800-785-1673.
This is an Animal Radio News Update.
I'm Lori Brooks. Well, all of the attempts to fight the opioid epidemic among humans is now leading to some restrictions that are trickling down some problems that are affecting pets. An opioid shortage is now forcing vet clinics and animal hospitals to use less potent drugs when performing surgeries on pets, which has led to changes for some in how they get animals under anesthesia and keep them under so they don't feel the pain. But because of this, a spay-neuter clinic up in Oregon is now restricting how many large female dogs are being spayed because obviously it takes longer to spay a female, so they have to keep them under. It also takes more anesthesia to do a large dog than a small dog, so the odds are really not in favor of large female dogs with this going on being spayed. But it is expected that the shortage for sedatives for pets will begin to subside within the next several months.
Dr. Debbie, are you finding that there's an opioid shortage at your clinic?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's various different reasons, but a lot of it's production and manufacturing. So that's a real problem. Human hospitals don't have the drugs they need to do the job. So veterinary hospitals also feel the same shortage.
Now, is there really a shortage, or is that sort of the political climate right now of creating that shortage?
No, it's not. Some people say, oh, this is because the, you know, opioid epidemic, they're forcing the hands to stop people. No, there is really a production issue. And I know that one of the plants that manufactured a lot of the injectable opioids was in Puerto Rico. So, there are some infrastructure issues there. So it's just not available. The good thing, and, you know, I would have to say the good thing is there are other alternatives. So at our office, you know, we are still doing business as usual. We have found alternatives. There's other means of pain management. We do a lot of nerve blocks, which are a great alternative. And if people are only relying on opioids for pain relief, gosh, you know, we can tap into these other things that really do a good job. So we do nerve blocks along incision lines. There are other drugs we can use and kind of what you call a multimodal pain management. So all is not without hope. It's just some of our most favorite, most potent tools are not at our access right now.
Okay.
Well, Netflix did a survey recently, guys, questioning pet lovers about how and what they like to watch on TV with their furry best friends. And here's what they found out. When it comes to watching TV, most people, about 71%, in fact, find pets to be the best binge-watching partner. But it doesn't stop there. 27% have even talked to their pet about the show or movie that they are watching or were watching. According to the survey, dog owners are more likely to choose action shows like Narcos and Marvel's Daredevil. That's, you know, if they're watching alone.
Ah, there is no accounting for our pets' tastes. At least they don't have the remote control in their hands or their paws. If they had that opposable thumb thing going on, who knows what we'd be watching.
I'm Lori Brooks. Get more breaking animal news anytime at animalradio.com.
This has been an Animal Radio News Update. Get more at animalradio.com.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Here's Hal and Judy.
And let's go to Blaine. Hey, Blaine, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Good. Where are you calling from today?
I'm near Effingham, Illinois.
Oh, okay. Are you a truck driver?
Yes.
Okay, on the road. Do you take your pet with you? You travel with your dog?
No, I don't.
Okay, I got the doctor here. What's up?
Oh, hey.
Hi. My doc's Bo. He's overweight, but he'll like drink a lot of liquids and he like swells up and he'll like, it looks like he retains water or something. And then when you, and then recently he started like wetting the bed where he lays and stuff. He doesn't mean to because he'll be like on the step, and he'll get up, and it's wet. You know, like.
Okay.
So I don't know what his problem is. If he's lost bladder control, or what it is.
Yeah. And in male dogs, you know, bladder control problems are not real common as the sole cause of urine leakage. Female dogs, sometimes we do see that they can have some sphincter problems, some leaky bladder problems, but it's pretty rare in male dogs. So for me, when I find out of a dog, a male dog, that's leaking urine in any context, especially if it's accompanied with drinking more or peeing large volumes of urine, that would warrant a veterinary visit, and I would check a urine sample and probably some blood as well. The things that the things that we're really going to be looking for are going to be conditions that cause your baby to drink more, things like diabetes, kidney concerns, liver concerns, and, you know, retaining water. Sometimes we think about heart disease, but usually there would be other symptoms that I'd be focused on and looking at. But I would definitely say, yeah.
He does have trouble with hair loss, but he's a Dachshund, and I've heard that's common.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And that might be something that can kind of tie things together. So for me, if I find out a dog is kind of losing hair, maybe getting a little pot-bellied and having excessive urinations, we might look at some hormone problems like Cushing's disease. So that, so that might be something else to put on the whole differential when you see the veterinarian. But I definitely would say, you know, I can tell you certainly you need to get this baby in, at least do some baseline screening on him and find out the underlying cause.
All right. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks for your call, Blaine.
He's sizzling hot.
Channel Cable with today's dog tip. We got a call on Animal Radio from a gentleman whose dog was marking. The dog's a Rottweiler mix, and he wanted to know how he can stop it. Well, the first thing you should do is always get your dog fixed early. Next, it's always a good idea to take your dog to the vet and make sure everything's okay with the plumbing. If that checks out, it's time to deal with the reality that your dog is marking the territory in and around your house to defend it. Marking is a way dogs let other dogs know, hey, this territory is occupied, and it will be protected. Dogs do this when they feel like there's nobody in the household strong enough to protect the territory. There's no leadership. One of the ways you can begin demonstrating leadership in your house is to stop your dog in the act of marking, but you've got to catch him right in the act, right while he's doing it. Right after is too late. Keep a short leash on your dog at all times. As soon as he makes his move, as soon as he cozies up to a piece of furniture or a place he's gone before, give it a quick yank. Then usher him outside as quick as you can. When he starts to go out there, you tell him he's a good dog. The other thing to remember, we've talked about this before, is you got to clean all the spots where he's gone, but you've got to use a cleaner that gets the scent out, or he'll be tempted to revisit those spots when you're not looking and mark again. You can get cleaners like this at your pet store. Remember, you are your dog's teacher. He's going to learn everything about the world from you. And just like we say with our kids, do as I do, not as I say, dogs learn by watching what you do. You'll notice your dog spends lots of time staring at you, just staring. Sometimes it's unnerving. He's looking for signs of strength and weakness. He's looking for leadership. If you don't lead, your dog's going to feel it necessary to step into that role. And that's when the trouble starts. All kinds of trouble. So take a leadership role and decide to teach your dog what you expect, rules, limitations. Remember to be consistent and use affection only after your dog is behaving the way you want. A lot of people give affection first. Affection comes last. Because the more affection you give your dog when he's behaving in a way you don't want him to, let's say excited, the more excited he's going to be. You're reinforcing the behavior. Together, we can do this. Get more tips at animalradio.com.
Good day, animal lovers. Vinny Penn, your party animal, coming at you on Animal Radio. Got an interesting question I'd like to ask you folks out there. And of course, feel free, hit me up at vinny@animalradio.com. And it is Vinny, I-E, at the end, much as my father hated that. He always thought I should go V-I-N-N-Y. Another story, perhaps, for another time. My question is this. Why is it whenever I park my car in a convenience store parking lot and I'm getting out and cutting between two other cars on my way to walk into the store, the rabid, aggressive, hostile beast that someone has left in their vehicle, usually a pickup truck, it is ninja quiet until I'm in between the two cars and then lunges through the halfway rolled down window of the truck just at the time that I'm passing through the cars? Can anyone answer that? It's like these dogs are left in the front seat of the vehicle and almost trained to, now you don't make a sound, don't let anybody know you're in there until they're creeping in between our car and the car next to us, and then scare the bejesus out of them. Because you know the guys who own these dogs say things like, bejesus. The other day I was on my way into the convenience store, just wanted to grab a soda, which I didn't even wind up doing because the Mountain Dew would have finished me off. The heart attack I had in the parking lot, it would have been the final blow. I'm walking in between a car and a truck. This German Shepherd Pit Bull Rottweiler hybrid. Yes, I believe they exist. And I'm going to call it a Germitweiler. Germitweiler. I'm going to call it a Germitweiler. Comes lunging through the halfway roll down window just at the, I mean, not 3 minutes, to 3 seconds before, not 3 feet before, just as I'm in between. And there's just enough window down so that when he's barking wildly, his saliva splatters me on the side of my face. And I have to scream, which I've been told I scream kind of like a girl, in the parking lot of the convenience store. The owner, of course, thinks this is hilarious, but if I was with my five-year-old, that would have been it. The dogs would have been off limits for the rest of her life. So please, somebody out there tell me, are dog owners training their dogs to sit like ninjas on the front seat of their vehicle with the window rolled halfway down, trained to wait just until that person cuts in between their vehicle and the one next to it, just for laughs? Is it? I got it. It's a hidden camera show. It's when dogs scare the crap out of you in parking lots. And hey, Vinny Penn's on the debut episode. Vinny Penn, Party Animal, Animal Radio.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing and always need to stick your fingers to test your blood sugar. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. Apply a discrete sensor on your body and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger sticks. If you are living with type 1 or type 2 diabetes and you administer insulin 3 or more times per day or use an insulin pump, you might be eligible for a CGM through your insurance benefits. U.S. Med partners with over 500 private insurance companies and Medicare. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill your insurance. Call us today for a free benefits check.
800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. That's 800-785-1673.
You're listening to Animal Radio. If you missed any part of today's show, visit us at animalradio.com or download the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Is Animal Radio celebrating the connection with our pets, and we'll head back to the phones in just a couple of minutes for your questions. And don't forget, you can reach out on our free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android and ask your questions from that there too. We fight the good fight right here on our own soil here in the U.S. We're doing everything we can to help animals find good situations, find homes, take them out of bad situations, educate people so that your pets may live a longer, healthier, happier life. But there are people that have gone beyond our soil to China. And we have Jeffrey Berry on the phone with us. He is the founder of No Dogs Left Behind. Hi, Jeffrey. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. I'm doing just fine here. And you're correct. Rescue has no borders as far as we're concerned.
You are the founder of No Dogs Left Behind. What is that, first of all?
So first is, we are an emergency response unit that goes beyond borders. It doesn't matter where it is that a dog's in need, we go there.
You just came back from China. What were you doing there?
So I'm still in China.
Oh, okay.
We're currently in China right now.
I did not know that.
We're currently in China now, and we've been here for the last 2 years assisting in emergency responses. We assisted in 619, which is in a historical rescue of 1,300 dogs that were in desperate need of care.
Jeffrey, why are they the dogs in danger there?
So you see, it's a very serious matter here in China. The dog's life here is very difficult, especially the larger breed dogs. The larger breed dogs aren't even legal in some of the geographical locations. The adoption programs here, we're trying to educate the Chinese people in adoption programs, not buying breeded dogs, but adopting dogs that are from rescues. Most of these dogs are stolen. They're stolen from homes, off the streets. And the way they are here in China is that they have these dogs that are collected from all over the place, and then they're beaten and tortured, and they're eaten. The myth is that they believe that it's a summer solace. They believe that they'll bring good health. They believe that they'll warm their bodies up. I mean, it's all a myth, and this is the 21st century and changes in order. So we believe in the sustainable component. We believe that it's critical to get these dogs to safety.
So these dogs that you're rescuing, are they kept there? They're going to be adopted out there? Or are you bringing all of them back to the United States?
So we believe in both. We believe in the educational awareness program to educate the people of China to adopt here versus buying breeded dogs. And then we believe that we need to take some of the dogs back to America because they have no chance here.
Jeffrey, how do the dogs that are stolen from homes, what do they get loose, or are they obtained in raids? How did they get to you? Because that's like too horrible.
So the rescues that we've been, we've shut down slaughterhouses, and we've gone to truck interceptions where the trucks were heading to, for example, last year, 505 to Yulin. And these brave activists intercepted these trucks, and they bring these dogs to a specific location. And when these dogs get to these locations, they're virtually dying from distemper, from parvo, from extreme trauma, from their bones exposed, from being stuffed in these cages. We go in and we implement 5 to 10 tier treatment protocols where we separate the dogs, and we educate these Chinese activists and these shelters on how to enforce a Western treatment protocol. And when they said that 80% would die, 80% have lived. So that's testament to No Dogs Left Behind in our treatment protocols.
Now, you've been doing this for quite a while. Do you see the dog meat trade slowing down at all?
Yes, I do. I see a change. I see a very big change in the movement. And again, one of the five pillars is education, educational awareness programs. And we have students that often come to No Dogs Left Behind in learning more about the dogs and how to maintain a lifestyle with a dog. So I believe that the educational awareness program is key and fundamental to the change.
Alongside Judy's question, do you see a paradigm shift in the way the Chinese are thinking about their animals, and especially companion animals?
Yes, I do. I really do. I think that, I say this with conviction, I think that change is in order. And I'm seeing this happen literally in front of my eyes, where in the past, dogs were always running free, and now I'm seeing many people walking the dogs on leashes and holding their dogs in their arms and taking much needed care of their dogs.
How do you get your money to do this?
Well, we have a social media outreach, and we're very blessed by fabulous donors who have contributed to the cause in ending the dog meat trade.
If people want to learn more, what's the website, Jeffrey?
It's nodogsleftbehind.com. Nodogsleftbehind.com.
And we'll put links to everything you've heard on today's show over at animalradio.pet. Jeffrey Berry, the founder of No Dogs Left Behind, doing great work in China. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now at 1-866-405-8405.
Hey, this is Nicole Sullivan on Animal Radio. Please spay and neuter your pets, please.
Looking for cheap flights or cheap tickets? Call the low-cost airline travel hotline now for prices so low, we can't publish them anywhere. We'll even save you money with cheap travel deals on hotels, rental cars, even complete travel packages. Call us first for the absolute cheapest prices on U.S. and international airline tickets and hotels. 802-341-4532. 802-341-4532. 802-341-4532.
Celebrating the connection with our pets. This is Animal Radio, featuring your dream team, veterinarian Dr. Debbie White and groomer Joey Villani. And here are your hosts, Hal Abrams and Judy Francis.
It's all about the pets here at Animal Radio. We love your dogs, your cats, your ferrets, your birds, your ostriches, whatever you have as a pet. And then, you know what? We love all kinds of animals, even if you don't have them as a pet. We love chimpanzees. I could spend my afternoon watching chimpanzee videos. I waste a whole day doing that and another day doing that just because I think they're so human-like, and that just connects with me somehow.
You don't like just watching humans?
No. Humans are human-like. Too dumb. Too human-like. Yeah. Anyway, we're going to have a behaviorist from the Chimp Haven in Louisiana. Amy Foltz will be joining us in just a few minutes. She'll tell us what it's like to hang around chimps all day. You're probably saying I do that at work anyway.
No, we hang around.
Well, you used
to
watch chimps all the time, right?
I did. I'll admit it. I was a chimpaholic. I actually went to chimp rehab meetings and stand up. I would, you know, hi, I'm Hal. I'm a chimpaholic. Boy, this has gone a bad direction really fast. What do you have coming up in the newsroom?
Well, I'm glad you're not watching chimps anymore because you now check out tech blogs, and you will send me good story ideas from those tech blogs. So I'm going to share one of those stories that you sent me on how electronic gadgetry is affecting our pets these days. I mean, what they are capable of hearing, seeing, feeling, and just the things we have around our homes is pretty incredible. It could be hurting them, too.
That's on the way. Hey, Rick, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Good. What's going on in your world?
Well, I have a schnoodle. He's about a year and a half to 2 years old. Very rambunctious, but he loves walks and to play and all that, but he does not like a car. He'll get real shaky, like riding in a car. He starts panting, salivating, and then eventually he'll throw up.
All right. Well, and that's definitely a hard thing. Are you out traveling right now with him?
No. He's at home. Okay. I'm a truck driver. I'm actually in Island Park, Idaho.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, the trick with dogs that have problems in the car travel, there's two components to it. There's actually what's more of a phobia, which causes them to be fearful, trembling, shaking, drooling. And then there's the dogs that have true motion sickness. Now, a dog with true motion sickness doesn't have to go through those other symptoms. And in fact, a dog with motion sickness, it's really just when they get on those windy turns that they'll start to get nauseated and vomit.
Right.
However, a dog that has motion sickness can build up those phobias because they know what's going to come. So you can get an overlap of two problems here. So we have to address it that way. The first part, if we've got time and opportunity before car travel, the best thing we can do is condition a dog to the car. And that can be a very labor-intensive process where we gradually train them to being near a car, being in the car gradually that goes down the back of the driveway, and then eventually working up to going around the blocks. Now, every dog is different, and you can't push them. So we may spend, you know, a week or two just getting them to do basic obedience, sitting right next to the car before we actually enter it. If we notice any fearful behaviors, ears are down and back, tail is low, slinking, looking around, licking the lips, then we're pushing them too far, and we don't want to take that next step and put them in the car and drive them around because we're not accomplishing anything. We're setting ourselves further back. So gradually we build up to this. We practice this with treats, rewards, and then eventually we build up to those smaller bits of time getting around the car, driving the car, that we can hopefully build them up to positive experiences. So that's the hard and the long way to correct these type of things when we've got anxiety. Some of the short-term things that we do, there's a lot of different things. So some dogs, if we really feel that they have motion sickness, I may use a drug like Dramamine. Or there's another one that's approved for dogs called Serenia, which helps to decrease their motion sickness, and truly in a motion sickness type problem. Won't do anything for that anxiety, so we got to work on that too. So I may add in some things like the thunder shirt, which can be a calming effect, as well as things like dog pheromones. Those help to kind of relax them in a natural way. Those could be in collars, sprays, things like that. So those are some other ways that we can help make training a little bit easier, or just even that car travel that you have to do all of a sudden. And I guess the other thing that I should mention is that when we are traveling with dogs in a car, we don't want them to run helter-skelter all around the car, because that can actually be very upsetting. It helps to feed their anxiety. When the more they can run from window to window and drool and lick the glass, it really makes them very much nervous. So seat belts or dog crates are a great way to keep them confined, and that'll help decrease some of that motion sickness that they'll have. And then the final thing, hey, I've even tried ginger snaps. Just like people, dogs can respond to the beneficial effects of ginger for motion sickness. So a couple ginger snaps or a little bit of some crystallized ginger can be very helpful, about 30 minutes to 45 minutes before you travel.
Okay. Yeah, he seems to shake. Yeah, I mean, even if I just bring him into the car, he'll start shaking. Not real comfortable with it. So.
Okay. Yeah, and that's where you'll have to step back to before you enter that car. You want to get some really yummy treats, pieces of nice American cheese, and you practice just going out to the car, sitting, opening the car door, but not getting in. Practice that until you can see that he's comfortable. And then walk him through the car, make him sit in the back seat, and then just walk right out. You're not going to make it seem any more threatening than that, and do that until you can do him comfortably with those behaviors.
Okay.
Thanks for your call, Rick. Hey, Walter, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Very good. Where are you calling from today?
Barbersville, West Virginia.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
How can we help you?
Okay. Well, I have a cat who makes it very difficult for me to apply the Advantage 2 to the back of her neck. She shifts her head all around. And I was wondering if there's some gadget or some way I can teach her to stop doing that and allow me to part her hair. It's a long-haired cat, too.
Okay, so she's kind of doing the exorcist when you're trying to do this.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Well, the easiest thing is to have a assistant, someone to help you out. I have found that when we need to do a topical or even for oral medications with cats, you can do what we call make a kitty burrito. Uh-huh. So you kind of wrap the kitty up in a towel.
Okay.
And it helps to keep the legs somewhat immobile. You can kind of hide the head at the opening and just get exposure to the neck area. For some cats, that can actually calm them because they don't feel like they're vulnerable.
Yeah.
So that's one route to do it. If we're just applying a flea tick topical, a lot of times you can just, by kind of using a gentle scruffing with your fingers, you'll get exposure and you can create like a little line of where you'll see the skin and just apply your flea topical in that area. Or for some cats, I like to go less stress, and you can do this by just letting her sit and do her own thing. Don't kind of manhandle her. Don't make her feel like she's being restrained. And I just start a little bit back further on the body than the area I'm going to go. And I just push with my finger, and I'm going to move forward up towards the head with just light pressure. And by doing that, you'll see, you know, where the skin meets the hair. And just kind of slowly do that, and you'll have a little line where you can apply the topical with very minimal restraint. So I don't know if either of those approaches, and I have my own cat. I used to do this with him. Little ladies' hair clips, you know, the kind you put your hair up with the little jaws.
Yeah.
It actually would induce my cat to almost like a kitten-like state where, you know, mama cat grabs them by the scruff of the neck and they relax.
Oh.
So for him, that was actually something that I could do things to him by just putting this very gently, you know, nothing, you know, barbaric here, but very gently on the scruff of his neck, and he would relax and just not move.
Huh.
So it really is depending what's your cat's personality, what he or she's going to adapt to the most easily with the least stress. But that's a little, what is your cat's personality? What kind of kitty do we have?
Well, ordinarily, she's very calm most of the time.
Oh, he is. Okay. Yeah, so I would probably either try the least restraint method. You know, if he's pretty chill, then you know, try the little hair grabber.
Okay. What does a hair grabber look like?
You know, when ladies take their hair and instead of putting in a ponytail, mm-hmm. they have a big clip in the back of their head.
Yeah.
those are the kind of things that we're looking at. So,
aren't they called alligator clips? And no. They aren't?
Alligator clips are roach clips.
Okay. Well, these are real tiny ones. Some are even like, you know, less than an inch long. They're about an inch long that you can find. Real tiny little hair clips.
Okay.
Yeah. Mine are a little bigger. I have, you know, long hair, but and usually an older one. So for the ones that I have that are about ready to be thrown away, those would be the best. You don't want one that's going to be too tight or too, you know, too firm that it's going to really grab the fur.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your help. Thank you.
Hey, all right. Good luck with that.
Thanks, okay. Walter. If you have any more questions, you can call back. Walter is listening on WSCW out of Charleston, West Virginia. Thanks, guys, for listening over there. Yes.
An alligator clip would work, too, if you have one of those on hand.
An alligator, a roach clip. Yeah, boy. Okay, so let's head back to the phones. Toll free from the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android. Well, I also wanted to make a mention really fast. We have an affiliate in Cambridge, Ohio, WBPS, Cambridge, Ohio. And they have a studio animal, too. Or they had a studio animal. They had Moose the Wonder Dog.
Aww.
Oh.
And apparently he was very influential in getting Animal Radio on that station. He unfortunately has passed due to cancer this last week.
Oh, no.
But we wanted to dedicate today's show to this
Moose.
Amazing Wonder Dog, Moose the Wonder Dog in Cambridge, Ohio.
Here's to Moose.
Here's to you, Moose. It's all for you today.
Here's to you, Moose. Me and you and a dog named Moose. Traveling and living off the land. Me and you and a dog named Moose. How I love being a free man.
Alan Cable with today's Goose Story.
Lucy, you got some explaining to do.
That's Bob. He's got some geese that are named after sitcom characters, and they
just want to stay together.
I always loved I Love Lucy.
Bob's afraid he might have to get rid of the geese.
And said, you have 10 days to get rid of it.
He lives in the town of Beloit, and there's an ordinance that prohibits his geese.
It was a shock.
Bob's also disabled, so he's medically allowed to have the geese.
Therapy pets.
I have to get up and let them out every day.
Bob started a change.org petition that already has 1,000 signatures from all over the world.
One of the first long distance one was Alaska, and I was excited about that. But then it started coming in Australia, Germany, Japan, just everywhere.
Bob has to pay $200 out of his own pocket to make a variance request, and there's no guarantee he'll get to keep his geese.
Once something gets in your heart and it's there, it's embedded in you, and they're embedded in me, and I'm embedded in them.
This is Animal Radio, baby.
I represent low-cost airlines, and we know a lot of you are not traveling right now, and we understand. However, if you do need to travel between now and the end of the year, now is a great time to lock in some of the lowest prices we've seen in a lifetime. Hey, in normal times, we can save you up to 75%, but now airlines are practically giving away seats. We have inside deals on over 500 airlines. Here are a few sample round-trip deals we found. Seattle to Vegas, $35. Chicago to Atlanta, $85. Los Angeles to Atlanta, $100. Of course, there are some limitations, but the airlines want your business right now. And cancellation and change fees are flexible. So fly somewhere this year, book now, save a ton, call right now.
802-341-4532. 802-341-4532. 802-341-4532. That's 802-341-4532.
This is Jane Lynch on Animal Radio. Please spay and neuter your animal. Spay or neuter. Let me say that again. You don't want to do both. Spay or neuter. Let me say it again. Can I do that?
You can do whatever you want.
Oh, God bless. I'm going to try it one more time. Hi, this is Jane Lynch on Animal Radio. Please spay or neuter your animal. I love it.
You do so good early in the morning.
I'm so caffeinated right now, can I tell you? I'm barely holding it together.
You're awesome.
You're listening to Animal Radio. If you missed any part of today's show, visit us at animalradio.com or download the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
It's Animal Radio. Hey, thanks for joining us. Go grab your pet. Bring them around the radio. They enjoy the show, too. I think. Maybe. The animals in the studio right now, they're actually asleep. I think the show calms them and makes them sleepy.
Hopefully. They come in here for their nap. Weekly nap. Yeah,
hopefully you're not doing the same thing.
Okay, now let's go to the phones.
Hi, Bob. How are you doing?
Oh, not too bad.
What's on your mind?
My dog, 2 years old, lab mix. Around her tail, she's been chewing on it, scratching and all that. She's got it raw with with the hair missing. Wondering is because of her food or what?
You said she's losing hair. Is that at like her rump area, right in front of the tail?
All around the tail, and
around the rump. Like actually and on the tail itself.
Not really just on the tail, but where the tail joins her body.
Okay, in that vicinity. Is the rest of her fur okay? Any other patterns?
No, that's the only bare spot she has.
How old is she?
She's two.
2 years old. Okay. Well, you're just getting into the fun, quieting down years for Labradors.
Oh, she's a lot of fun, yeah. She keeps me out of trouble.
Well, I just laugh because I have two Labradors and one's perpetually a two-year-old. So, So with her having that itchiness, does it seem better, worse at any time of the year, or has it been kind of an ongoing issue?
It just started like maybe 2 weeks ago, where she started, digging at it and scratching and chewing and all that.
Okay. In that area on the kind of the rump right in front of the tail, that's a prime area for fleas and for flea dermatitis. So I would definitely want to make sure that we're addressing really vigilant flea control, because even one little bite from those critters can send a dog with a flea allergy into the itchies for weeks. So that would be one of the first things I'd want to make sure that we're doing a good flea program with shampoos. There's different topical meds. And you can kind of lift up the hair, and if you kind of push the hair backwards, sometimes you can actually see evidence of fleas, and that may be what we call flea dirt, where you see like looks like pepper almost under the hair coat. So that might give us a clue that we need to really work on that flea control.
I haven't seen a flea on her.
Okay.
Basically, the only place you can see is on her belly, but I haven't seen any scurrying across her belly at all.
Yeah, and it can be hard. I mean, these little guys, fleas are pretty tiny, so you might not see them, but look for that flea dirt. If you see that and you don't see any critters, it means they're still there. Now, outside of fleas, there's a lot of other things we could be looking at. And Labradors are a dog that we see a lot of problems with, allergies and skin-related problems of all sorts. So anything from yeast infection in Labradors is very common, but allergies where they're just having almost like a hypersensitivity, where they're scratching, they're itching. It tends to be in more than just one area. So I would want to make sure that we're looking at that area. If we see any kind of redness, any kind of crusting, anything yellow, then we really want to make sure we get a sample of that, because sometimes we'll add in antibiotics and yeast medicine, things along those lines, if there's an infection. For itching, for mild itching, for allergies, I'm a fan of using, antihistamines. And you'd want to, talk to your veterinarian about the right dosage and so forth. But that would be something like doggy Benadryl. And then ultimately, we might even look at her diet. It's a little less common to have just an all of a sudden problem with a food allergy. But for some dogs, and Labradors are a breed, we can see food allergies where it's things that they eat that actually cause their skin to itch. And it seems kind of crazy, but that is the case in dogs.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Hi, it's Alan Cable. I was in the dog park a couple of days ago and saw a dog just torturing a woman, dragging her around by the leash. He was out of control. It looked like she was trying to reel in a shark. A lot of folks are at a loss as to how to get their dog to walk calmly on a leash. Today, I'm going to teach you how to do that. Now, for your part, it's going to take some time and consistency. But if you do it in no time at all, your dog will be walking right by your side. What you're going to do is get 10 to 15 feet of leash, maybe two leashes put together or a long rope. Attach it to a pinch collar, a choker, whatever you've got. I like to use a slip choker chain. Now, go into the backyard or to a park that's big enough for you to walk in. You're going to be walking to the four corners of a square, and you're going to have the leash attached to your chest, both hands firmly holding on to it. Like the leash is attached to your entire body and your hands are glued to your chest. Now you're going to stand at the corner of your square facing the next corner that you're going to walk to, about 60 yards away. Just stand there for about a minute and then just start walking. Take off. Your dog is going to get a major correction. Oh yeah, I forgot to mention this, and this is very important. No talking at all while you're doing this. So you're going to be walking really fast and your dog's going to be getting corrections as you walk. You're going to pay no attention to your dog. When you get to the second corner of the square, you're going to face the third corner and just stand there for another 60 seconds. Then take off. Again, your dog's going to get a correction. You're going to do this for about 20 minutes, but you're going to notice after 10, your dog is pretty much starting to pay attention to where you are. And that's because he realizes when you take off, he gets a correction. So he wants to pay attention to you and what you're doing. Now, you're going to do this every other day for 20 minutes for about 2 weeks. Sometime during that 2 weeks, you're going to notice your dog doesn't get a correction anymore because when you start moving, he's right by your side. You're also going to notice that he's watching you, maybe even sitting by your side waiting for you to take off. When this happens, it's time to go to a 6-foot leash, and you'll do the same thing for another week or two. Step two, next time. Get more tips at animalradio.com.
I am the family dog, and it's that time of year again. The one where pet parents start looking for Fido-friendly hotels and destinations where Fido is welcome. Make no bones about it. Pets are part of the family, and we like to sniff out new places too, and we hate to be turned away, especially when we're on our best behavior. So we won't be left out in the cold. Be sure to pick up a copy of Fido Friendly Magazine to find the best hotels and destinations where Fido is always welcome. Go online to FidoFriendly.com and subscribe today.
This is an Animal Radio News Update.
I'm Lori Brooks. I would like to thank our headmaster here, Hal Abrams, who sent me this story, which I thought was fascinating. You're a techie, Hal, so I guess you frequent the Kim Komando blog?
I love it. Every day I check it out.
Well, that's where this story comes from, and thank you for sending it to me. So you are now, before you find out about that latest, I've got to have that, you know, new tech toy. Don't. Think about your pet. Tech expert Kim Komando says, every single piece of technology that we put into our homes could very easily emit a sound that cannot be heard by humans, but comes in probably too loud and clear for pets. That is not to say that pets are suffering because of all of our gadgets, but the possibility does exist. It could be happening. She says in scientific terms, humans can hear sounds up to about 20,000 megahertz, while dogs can hear up to 45,000 and cats even better at 64,000, which is always funny because, you know, you see a cat in the backyard, a wild cat, you tap your finger on the window, right? And it can hear you like 50 yards away. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, you know, that just means that our frequencies... Hang on, Tater.
All the dogs
are you just laughing at my animal menagerie here?
Well, yeah, and that I'm sure animals all across the country right now hear Tater, and they're perking their ears up because it's such a high-pitched noise that Tater emits.
You know what we call him?
What?
Well, his nickname. When he exhibits this behavior, we call him BWB, and that is for my big whiny baby. Because his problem is that I have the baby gate up today.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, sometimes he does get loud like this.
Oh, it was for him. I thought it was for me to keep me out of the street.
No.
But it's for him. Okay, that makes me feel so much better. Okay.
I keep it behind my desk. You probably didn't notice I had it here. But that's why it's up, because I want to keep him over on the other side of my studio, because he just gets, I don't know, he... It's a little demanding sometimes.
Well, maybe he's hearing some of these noises of all of the electronics in the studio that we can't hear.
Ooh.
And annoying him or something like that.
That's an excellent point, because he does this every time we go on the air.
Yep. Yep.
I thought it was just his bad manners.
So turn off all the computers now.
Don't do that, please.
Okay, so dogs can hear up to 45,000, right?
Yep.
Cats to 64,000, and humans only 20,000. So that means that there are lots of frequencies that are undetectable to us, but very noticeable, even hurtful to animal ears. And unfortunately for our pets, manufacturers design things for humans. So, however, there is a number of studies that have been done to try and determine what kind of impact that noise has on animals. Mm. And one of those was done by Southern Illinois University School of Medicine Department of Pharmacology. It concluded that technology and noises can lead to issues with animals' hearts, their sleeping, their endocrine cycles, while making them more susceptible even to seizures. And now think about this. Lights can be a problem too, according to Kim Commando, because she says animals see the world differently than humans, and that's really bad news for pets whose owners use LED bulbs in their home. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think about this, because LED lights flicker more than other kinds of lights. Yeah. So at the speed that we see them, we see it as, you know, beautiful light that is inexpensive. But LED lights for humans, they have about 24 hertz or flickers per second. And that to us as humans looks fine, looks consistent, looks like a flawless movie. Dogs, however, are sensitive up to 80 hertz or flickers per second. So they are going to notice that flickering much, much easier than we do.
Yeah, and that's like, isn't that seizure material?
Exactly.
Well, for any, I mean, people, the same thing that have migraines and seizures, flashing lights can trigger those.
There's a new veterinarian in Los Angeles, guys, who has done a study that finds out one of every eight pets in Southern California tests positive for internal parasites. Hmm. And that can plague a pet's insides, causing a lot of health issues.
What do you think of those stats there, Dr. David? Do you think they're accurate?
Absolutely. In my area, with the lab that we use, we actually get results back, and they keep track of that. One out of every 10 fecal tests that I submit, one out of 10 is positive.
Okay.
So I definitely believe that. It's probably higher because those are only the people that are actually going to see the veterinarian.
And that's in the desert, too, where the parasites are less than this California coast or Florida.
Right, yeah.
Remember, okay, we're talking about parasites here. If you don't pick up the poop after your dog goes to the bathroom, well, you could be putting other pets at risk because of, you know, they can get parasites from sniffing that poop that somebody else has left behind or walking through it. They can get the worms by just those small, what you think are inconsequential actions. Common symptoms for a dog that has worms includes a poor appetite or the lining of its nostrils. Its ears and gums could be pale in color. They could have diarrhea and sometimes vomit because of these worms. Now, in cats, tapeworms are the most common parasite, but roundworms and whipworms can also affect cats. And fleas, important to remember, can carry parasites to your pet as well. And, you know, we think just other cat or dog poop, don't let your dog near it. But also poop from wildlife, too, is, yeah, not good. Mm. I'm Lori Brooks. Get more breaking animal news anytime at animalradio.com.
This has been an Animal Radio News Update. Get more at animalradio.com.
You're listening to Animal Radio. If you missed any part of today's show, visit us at animalradio.com or download the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Never saw me do the funky chicken like that, huh?
No, you're pretty good.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah. Can't unsee that.
Well, I've mentioned it many times how I'm a big chimp lover, and that if you could have chimps, if it was good for them, I would probably have a chimp. But they don't live in captivity, generally. That's not good for them. And frankly, I know my wife would have trouble with any animal that would throw its poop anywhere. Here in the very U.S. that we live in, there is a chimp sanctuary. It's called Chimp Haven. And we have Amy Foltz. She's the Director of Behavior and Research joining us. Hi, Amy. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing great today. Thanks for having me.
So you're in Louisiana, right?
Yeah, northwest Louisiana, real close to Texas.
And that's where the Chimp Haven Sanctuary is. How big is that area?
Well, we are actually on about 200 acres within a larger nature park. And it's a beautiful forested setting for the chimps. And very rural.
And you're rescuing chimps. I've got to think that the chimps that you're rescuing, and this is, I'm just throwing this out there, just spitballing, are chimps that people thought they were going to have as pets, and then realize that that just doesn't work out?
Well, we actually have only one chimp that was kind of in a pet situation. Most of our chimpanzees are actually being retired from biomedical research in the United States.
So these are chimps that were in research labs and were actually born or lived most of their life under fluorescent lights, I would imagine?
Yeah, it depends. Some of the chimps were actually brought in from Africa back in the late 60s or early 70s, and some of the chimps were born in captivity. And then, as I mentioned, we do have one former pet here and some other chimps that were used in different ways. We have some that were utilized in cognitive research in a university setting as well.
And so you have some old chimps there then, huh?
Yeah, we sure do. Our two oldest are Jacob and Sarah Ann, and they're both 59.
Wow. How long do they live?
They can live into their 50s or 60s. They're considered elderly typically after the age of 35, but we definitely have lots of them that are over 35 and in their 40s.
So how many do you have there?
Right now we have over 240 chimpanzees.
Wow.
And we're actually regularly retiring additional chimpanzees on a monthly basis right now. We'll stop that in the summer because it gets too hot here in Louisiana to continue transporting the chimps. They're actually coming from New Mexico from a place called Almogordo Primate Foundation, and we've been retiring the chimps over the last year or so from that organization.
And they'll live their life out there with you?
Once they come to Chimp Haven, this is their final home, and they'll be with us until the end of their lives.
I would imagine being brought up in an environment, a scientific research environment, that maybe some are, I can't find a good polite word, but let me just say pissed off.
Hate humans?
Yes.
Well, you know, every facility is different, and I think just like people have very different personalities, some of us are very cantankerous and others are very friendly and sociable. The chimps are sort of the same way. So sometimes I think it may have nothing to do with how they were treated, but just their own intrinsic personalities in terms of how they react to others, both other chimps and people. But yeah, certainly some of them really don't want to have much to do with us unless we have food or goodies for them.
We are with Amy Foltz, the Director of Behavior and Research at Chimp Haven. I have so many chimp questions. More on the way. Stick around.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing and always need to stick your fingers to test your blood sugar. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. Apply a discreet sensor on your body and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger sticks. If you are living with type 1 or type 2 diabetes and you administer insulin 3 or more times per day or use an insulin pump, you might be eligible for a CGM through your insurance benefits. U.S. Med partners with over 500 private insurance companies and Medicare. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill your insurance. Call us today for a free benefits check.
800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. That's 800-785-1673.
You're listening to Animal Radio. If you missed any part of today's show, visit us at animalradio.com or download the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Oh, what did he say?
He said, we're all across the USA, the most listened to pet show today. Animal Radio, we're everywhere you go. Animal Radio. Animal Radio.
We are with Amy Foltz, the Director of Behavior and Research at Chimp Haven.
So is it true that there are more chimpanzees that are living in sanctuaries that remain in these research facilities?
Yeah, we just recently reached that huge milestone of having more chimps in sanctuary than we do in laboratories in the U.S., which is a really big deal. And that, you know, that number keeps going up in terms of more chimps keep moving to sanctuary.
I don't understand. I thought the research was no longer. Why should they still be in labs anywhere?
Well, it takes a while, the process, in order to get them moved to sanctuary. So we can't just take 100 chimps and take them and plop them into the sanctuary. They have to make the trip, and we have to be very careful and keep animal welfare in mind the whole entire time. And the trucks can only hold typically 6 to 9 chimps at a time. And then the chimps get to our facility. They have to go through a quarantine process. And many of the chimps are coming in smaller groups, and we have to integrate them into larger groups. So we're doing introductions, and they have to have time to acclimate. Just like if you think about it from the standpoint of if a person moves to a new country for the first time, it takes a little while for you to get used to that culture and acclimate to the area and the time change, et cetera. It's sort of the same for the chimps. They've got new caregivers. They might be experiencing new foods for the first time. It's a different climate. So they're adjusting, and that takes a little bit of time. So we have to give them time to do that before we can bring in the next shipment.
I guess I'll ask the question that I'm sure every chimp lover is wondering. I certainly am. Would this be an opportunity for me to go meet some chimps? Could I go and volunteer and help out a day, or is that something that you just shy away from?
Yeah, we do have volunteers that we try to take volunteers who, you know, can come on kind of on a regular basis. But the other thing that we have is 6 days out of the year we have something called Chimpanzee Discovery Days. And we open the sanctuary up to the public, and not the entire thing, just kind of select parts of the sanctuary where the chimps maybe aren't being introduced and we aren't actively quarantining them or anything. But people can come and talk to our staff and meet some of the chimps that make Chimp Haven home. And we also have an event called a Chimp Chat and Chew, where it's a little bit more intimate. You get a talk with a staff member and then kind of a behind-the-scenes tour as well. Those sell out really fast. So,
can I ask a question?
Yes, of course.
I kind of wanted to see this process through from, you know, like what it can be for a chimp in a research facility, say. And then I wondered if you could tell us about one of your favorite chimps, or let's say your absolute favorite chimp in the facility there, because we all know you got to have one.
Yeah, certainly. I have an all-time favorite who is now deceased, but his name was Mason. And I tend to like the male chimps who kind of have a sense of humor. They're a little goofy, and they tend to act a little bit like the little brother who's poking you and, like, I'm not poking you kind of a thing. They like to tease a little bit. And so my favorite living chimp right now is a chimpanzee named Matthew. And he is, in my opinion, the most handsome chimp here, and that's corroborated by others as well. But he loves to, we don't touch the chimps because we're so genetically similar. We can actually share any upper respiratory viruses or tummy viruses and things like that. So we don't touch them, but we use long-handled spoons to tickle them and play with them, and he loves to have you play with his feet. And chimps laugh. A lot of people don't know that chimps actually do laugh. So you can get him laughing if you play with his feet and tickle him. So he's a
How does a chimp laugh sound like? Can you do a chimp laugh? I'd love to hear it.
I don't know if you
good one.
Kind of a very breathy, panty kind of a thing.
A typical day for one of these chimps, do they have any of the electronics, the iPads to play with, or are they texting? Are they out? What are they doing during the day?
Yeah, no, not typically. What's most important to a chimpanzee is another chimp, being social with the other chimpanzees. And the iPads and the electronics, sometimes when we have what we call interaction days with our caregivers, we might bring an iPad to show them to do a game or something for that. But that's like a special kind of a treat. Most of the time, they're spending time out in their outdoor enclosures in the beautiful Louisiana weather and in our forested areas. Just being chimps, living the chimp life.
Ah, sounds good. I wish I could live the chimp life.
You'd fit right in, Hal.
What's the website if people want to learn more?
chimphaven.org.
And we'll put links to everything you've heard on today's show over at animalradio.com. Amy, thanks so much for what you do with the chimps and for talking with us today.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you again for having me.
I don't know about you. I had a lot of fun today, but it is time for us to go take our dogs and cats for a walk. I'm going to leash up the old cat now. It's something I started a week ago. I'm really sorry I did, because now the cat sits at the door all day wanting to go out. But we'll go take the cats and the dogs for the walk. Hopefully you'll do the same. If you need your fix during the week, visit us over at animalradio.pet or download the Animal Radio app for iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. Have a great one.
Bye-bye.
Bye. See how you said take a walk, and guess who heard you?
They can hear everything.
This is Animal Radio Network.